Kildare Today with Owen Beatty.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, the regional independent group has cautioned the government that it requires an undertaking not to merely accept its proposals, but to have them implemented in relation to its counter-motion on the eviction ban. Independent TD Verona Murphy has told the Dáil that the group awaits further clarity on the immediacy of the government's actions before committing to support the motion. The Wexford TD was speaking on Tuesday evening as Sinn Féin put forward a motion in the Dáil seeking to extend the eviction ban until January 2024. TDs will vote on the government's counter-motion tonight. Now, we're going to hear the views of independent TD for Kildare South, Cathal Berry, in just a moment. He's also a member of that regional independent group. But first of all, there were sharp exchanges during the debate with Sinn Féin Deputy Leader Pearse Doherty calling Minister for Housing Dara O'Brien the Minister for Homelessness, while his party colleague Eoin O'Brien called on the minister to get his head out of the sand. We're going to hear from Minister Dara O'Brien in this exchange, but first up, here is Sinn Féin housing spokesperson Eoin O'Brien.
We're going to see levels of homelessness, Minister, that nobody ever thought was possible. And I have to say, Minister, you are responsible. You and your cabinet colleagues have made this decision. But more importantly, the reason why we're in this crisis is because you failed to deliver an adequate supply of social and affordable homes since taking office. Not only are your targets too low, but year after year, you've missed them. You've also failed to respond to what has been a shrinking private rental sector over 6 or 7 years, something that was happening when you were in opposition, you spoke loudly about, and you have done nothing about since becoming minister. But the worst decision of all is the decision to end the ban on evictions. And last October, I wrote to you, I set out in some detail measures you could and should have taken. I wrote to you again 2 weeks ago, repeating many of those measures. And on both occasions, not only did you ignore the advice that came from opposition, but you ignored the advice that came from NGOs, from homeless service providers in the public sector, and other opinion makers. And as a consequence, we are going to have a government decision that willingly, consciously and knowingly will lead to ever-increasing levels of homelessness.
And bring the winter eviction ban to an end as planned on a phased basis on the 31st of March was not one that we took lightly, but we believe it is the correct decision to take. We know there are people facing very significant challenges. Renters who are in receipt of state assistance while waiting for a transfer to a more secure social home. Renters in tenancies where the landlord is considering leaving the market. Renters who want more than anything than to buy their own home. And this government are and will do everything we can to help these people. At the crux of everything we do is the need to increase supply of housing. Extending the eviction ban would not do that. If we were to do, as Sinn Féin asked, and extend the moratorium to the end of January, we would only serve to shrink the number of homes available to rent. If we were to do what they are asking, we would only be having this very same debate in the middle of winter. And if we were to do as you are asking, there would be no phasing out period, rather a hard cliff edge of evictions in the weeks after Christmas, as you've proposed. The opposition know this, but they're more interested in politicising the housing crisis and rather than putting forward pragmatic solutions.
Now, independent TD Verona Murphy said the regional independent group had put forward 8 proposals in an amendment to the government's counter-motion in order to be constructive. She said the proposals were designed to keep small landlords in the market through the provision of tax relief, as well as introducing provisions to make existing planning permissions viable and the extension of the rent-a-room scheme. She said government indicated earlier that they will accept those amendments, although it's not entirely clear from the amendments published this evening, yesterday evening, that is, that this is the case. She went on to say, we will need to engage further with Minister for Finance and the Minister for Housing on the amendment that they propose for their motion, reflecting the regional group's requirements. The independent TD added that the group welcomed the epiphany that the government had in accepting the significant amendments proposed by them. She went on to say, I would caution government that we require an undertaking not to merely accept our amendments, but to have them implemented. Fudging language in motions such as these will not give our constituents homes. Now, as you heard there, Ono Brin, Sinn Féin's housing spokesperson, said the state was going to see levels of homelessness that nobody ever thought was possible. He described the government's proposals aimed at providing a safety net for those who would receive notices to quit as being something that in the coming months will be hastily cobbled together and less convincing than measures announced by the coalition 2 weeks ago. Mr. O'Brien added that while people would associate with the name Dara O'Brien was the minister who deliberately increased homelessness of single people, adults and pensioners. As always, I'd be interested to get your views on that, and what way do you think that debate and vote is going to go tonight? 0833 97 97 97. Now, we're just waiting to get through to independent TD Cathal Berry, who I understand is caught up with another engagement, so we will speak to him in due course. But in the meantime, we'll move on to other issues here on the programme. But as I say, get in touch with us, 0833 97 97 97. Where do you stand in terms of this eviction ban and the lifting of it and the vote that's going to happen tonight? Do you think as though maybe government TDs, backbenchers, might side with the opposition? We've already seen or heard whisperings that Nessa Hourigan and Patrick Costello of the Green Party are going to support the opposition. But could we see other TDs in that sense deciding that, you know, they're going to go with the opposition anyway? As I say, let us know. You can also call us on 045 898 999 or you can email studio@kfmradio.com. Just to give the view as well, because a lot of the talk here is in relation to Sinn Féin, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael. What about some of the other parties? I mean, Labour leader Ivana Bacic said her party had been left with no choice but to put forward a motion of no confidence in the government next week unless there was a reversal of its decision to end the eviction ban. A Social Democrats TD Keane O'Callaghan said Green TDs should show some backbone on the issue and that he didn't believe that when any of them stood for election, they were running on the basis of when homelessness is at record levels, they would be supporting measures that would increase that even further. So we'll get back to that in a moment. But moving on, and we touched on this from the outset of the programme, that 6 out of 10 taxpayers in Ireland still don't claim tax relief on their medical expenses. That's according to a new survey. Well, on the line is Gerry Scully. He's an accountant with Irish Tax Rebates. Good morning, Gerry, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Owen. Good morning to you and your listeners.
Just first of all, Gerry, outline what Irish Tax Rebates do, who you are.
Basically, Irish Tax Rebates are a tax rebate company. We're based in SI, and we basically review all taxes for PAYE workers, such as, you know, nurses, teachers, people working in health services, any type of PAYE work, basically. And we review their taxes for the last 4 years, back to 2019, and we try to obtain them tax refunds based on the credits that they're eligible for.
Okay, and we've spoken to you before and to your colleagues, Gerry, in relation to maybe people availing of the rent tax credit in recent months, but this is a different type of tax relief now when it comes to medical expenses. 6 out of 10 taxpayers, is that quite high, or would that be quite typical that people don't get that tax back?
Ironically enough, Owen, it's actually in line with the proportion of rental people that are not being proactive and claiming the credit. So it's basically we have to communicate to people better, you know, that it's, you know, pull back the curtains. It's not a mystery to claim medical expenses. It's relatively straightforward. And, you know, a lot of people incur medical expenses throughout the year. And, you know, you do get 20% back on medical costs. So it's there. It's people's money. They just need to be proactive and apply for the rebates.
OK, what type of medical expenses are we talking about here, Jerry?
So you're looking at the basic ones would be, you know, your GP, consultant, hospital expenses, the prescription costs. Then you have your non-routine dentals, such as, you know, root canal or orthodontic treatment, which can be quite expensive. And then moving down, you know, you have laser eye treatment, IVF and fertility treatment, maternity care. Then there's ongoing costs, you know, coming into the summer with people being out more. There's physio costs, chiropractor costs, all these type of costs. And then, you know, you have your speech and language, psychotherapy, you know, and actually dietary expenses can also be claimed. So there's a myriad of expenses that can be claimed that are just they're there to be claimed if people go about claiming them.
Okay, and if we look at maybe the reasons why people don't claim them, and I know this has been set out previously, people might be too lazy to do it. They might think it's too lengthy and complex. Other people maybe don't understand the way tax back actually works. And that's obviously where tax rebates come in, because you kind of do most of the heavy lifting.
Yeah, there's an overlap in people. There's 4 in 10 people, you know, maybe don't submit a tax return, and some of them, a very small proportion, might be, you know, it might be apathy, or, you know, they just don't get round to it. Then there's a portion that are actually, you know, revenue, they just don't want to engage at revenue. They're afraid nearly to engage for whatever reason, and some people find it just that little bit too complex. So Irish tax rebates, you know, we take the mystery out of it. We proactively help our clients. We've got a great customer service team. They're based in Athy, and, you know, in the case of medical expenses, we have a medical department there that will, you know, you just send in the receipts. They'll go through them. They'll, you know, sort them out into years and make sure to review the receipts to make sure which are allowable. And, you know, basically then we review all other taxes as well, like myself here, I'm working from home. I can claim a work from home. You know, if you're out working in the elements, as they say, there's lots of tax credits for people out in construction and engineering and all these type of things. So there's literally, you know, there's tax credits for everyone, so long as they avail of it. And if they don't want to engage at revenue, they can engage with ourselves. We operate on a no rebate, no fee basis, and our charge, if we do obtain a refund, is generally 7% plus VAT, which is actually the lowest rate in the country.
Okay, just a query in from a listener as well, asking, are receipts for the last 4 years to claim? So is it going back to 2019 that you can claim as far back as?
That's it, yeah. You can go right back to 2019. And a useful bit of information, because I know with myself, with kids, you bring a child to the doctor and, you know, you're running back to get a prescription. The last thing you're thinking about is putting stuff away to claim tax rebates on. Is if you go into your local pharmacist, the pharmacist that you use regularly, and ask for a statement, they're able to provide you with a statement for the last 4 years. And a lot of GP practices and etc. and physiotherapists even are digitised now, so they should be able to provide a statement for the last 4 years. So you have it in a, you know, it's nice and in a neat A4 sheet or whatever. So it's, you know, it takes the heavy lifting away rather than retaining receipts all the time, you know.
Okay, and just remind us then, if people want to get in touch with Irish Tax Rebates, what's the process then of taking it forward, Jerry?
Well, your first port of call is to log on to our website, irishtaxrebates.ie. And on the website, we have a 60-second form. It's literally just input details. You'll have the details to hand, like your date of birth, your address, and TPS number. You fill out in 60 seconds. We look to turn around within, you know, less than 2 weeks, 12-day period. And it's quite busy at the moment, but we're trying to hold to that target. And, you know, we get the, once we obtain a refund, hopefully we then issue payment to the client by bank transfer. And we operate all over the country. We've 350,000 clients all over the country. So actually being based in Athy is quite good for local people, because they can literally drop in their medical receipts by hand or whatever into our offices there in Athy.
Okay, that's Gerry Scully, accountant with Irish Tax Rebates. More information on their website and social media if you want to get more details on that. But as I say, they do the heavy lifting, and it's not as daunting maybe as it might seem trying to get your tax back. Get in touch with them and see, you might be due some money back. So thanks to Gerry Scully for joining us this morning. Let's go to the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District, and Fine Gael councillor Kevin Duffy is with us now. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Owen.
Local issues down in the Monastrevin area, Kevin. And if we start off, you wanted the council to install rumble strips on the L7011 prior to the crossroads. Now, you may put some names on these roads for me, Kevin.
Yeah, no problem. It's near Turville Cross as you head from Monastrevin to Kildare Town. The council did some fantastic work there on the Cherryville Cross with a low-cost accident scheme, upgrading of line marking and signage. But this junction is right very close to that intersection. It's on what would be the Ellistown Road, and the intersection is with the Lackamore Road. So as you come up from Lacka, you come to a T-junction with the Ellistown Road, and opposite to the right-hand side is that intersection at Cherryville Cross. And it's actually, the road just has a significant dip in it from a topography point of view. So if you're coming from Ellistown and somebody's coming out from the Lackamore side and you look left, you can't see the car coming from Ellistown. And it's an 80-kilometre road, and it's fair enough, and a car might be travelling at 80 kilometres. They're thinking about stopping for the Cherryville Cross, but they're not thinking about that junction beforehand, which is the Lackamore junction. There's not much they can do from a kind of a physical engineering point of view to a great degree with sight lines because of this natural dip in the landscape. But I thought maybe some rumble strips to go with, there is an existing sign, but some rumble strips might make the oncoming traffic aware that there is a junction before the main intersection. So the council has agreed to have a look at that and to hopefully install them rumble strips. There is no houses in the immediate area, so any noise from vehicles hopefully shouldn't be an issue, and we might just make that a small bit safer for vehicles in the area.
Okay, you also wanted the council to install a footpath at the front of the Woodview estate. Is that going to happen?
Yeah, the council have agreed through the Municipal District Office to have a look at it. It's not a big job, Owen, but one that just will help with accessibility and pedestrians going to and from the estate. There's a main entrance, but there's a natural cycle line across the grass to kind of come out of the estate to access the footpaths and amenities in the area. And there's a couple of little stones that people would tread across, but on days when it's mucky, it's not really something you want to be walking around. So ideally, what I asked for was a concrete footpath. It's only about 10 metres long to connect the footpath from the town into the estate, and the council have agreed to do that, and I've no doubt we'll have that done in the coming months.
Okay, also then, did you get an update on the Barrow Blueway works? A lot of people querying this.
Yeah, no, it's a good update. There's really positive works, as you know, have been happening over the last number of years with Waterways Ireland. And kind of the last piece of the jigsaw is a contract with Kildare County Council in partnership with Waterways Ireland, which is to do with the main intersection and bridges along the Blueway. So a lot of people would have seen the fabulous walkways that have been put in along the towpath, but every time you get to a bridge with a road, that piece of work isn't completed yet. So it's all that work stretching from Ballateague all the way down to Athy. And Kildare County Council have appointed a contractor now to undertake them works, and we're looking likely that's going to start in April. And it'll happen in three clusters. They effectively will have three work crews. One will be up around the Ballateague Rattangan stretch. There's four sections of upgrades to happen in that area. The second cluster will be from Wilson's Bridge, sort of out towards Rattangan, through Monastrevin, all the way down towards the M7 underpass of the motorway. So there'll be another crew, and there's five intersections and roadworks that happen there. And then finally, the third cluster is from Vickerstown all the way down to Atai, and there's seven sections of work in that part of the scope. So the work, as I said, hopefully will start in April. About 6 months of work, so we're looking October, November this year when all them works will be complete, and that will pretty much get us to 90-95% complete of the Barrow Blue Way works, and please God, we're heading towards maybe an official launch and opening in the spring of next year.
Okay, finally then, Kevin, I saw on social media yourself and Martin Hayden were down in Monastrevin yesterday looking at progress in terms of schools and other infrastructure in the town.
Yeah, we had a very positive visit. Obviously, it's been a long time coming on, and there's been a lot of work locally and through all the political channels around these projects, being the Monastrevin St. Paul's Secondary School, which is nearing completion, and we're hoping that the handover of that is going to be this summer, with the new school opening in September. We have a primary school that's under construction now that just started, and that will be the amalgamation of the boys' school and the girls' school into a new amalgamated primary school, which will be absolutely fabulous. That started construction. We're probably another 2 years away from that being completed. But again, it's fabulous to see concrete being poured and new buildings coming out of the ground. And then finally, we went and visited the daycare centre, which is amalgamation of services of daycare and also local public nurse facilities in a heritage building on Drogheda Street, which has been completely renovated and extended. It's about a $1.4 million contract, and that works are underway, and it's looking very positive, and we might see that project being complete maybe end of the year, early next year, and a brand new daycare centre, which currently has been temporary operated out of Monastrevin GA Club with their fabulous support. But it'd be wonderful to have a new home for the daycare centre going forward.
Okay, great stuff. Fine Gael, councillor on the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District in the Monastrevin area, Kevin Duffy. Thanks for your time, Kevin, and good morning. Coming up after the break, we'll be speaking to the Garda Representative Association. And just to let you know, Cottlebury Independent TD will join us after 10 o'clock to give the independent's view on the eviction ban.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, welcome back. We'll be catching up on some of your messages in a moment, but Conor Lally, writing in the Irish Times yesterday, said a new Garda recruitment campaign aimed at ensuring 1,000 recruits are taken into the force this year is set to be launched on Friday, though the Association of Sergeants and Inspectors expressed concern at how effective it will prove. Association General Secretary Antoinette Cunningham said a career in policing in the Republic was now not the job it once was, and she believed efforts to recruit 1,000 Gardaí per year would prove challenging. Well, we wanted to get the views of the Garda Representative Association, and on the line is John Joe O'Connell, who's the Kildare representative of the Garda Representative Association. Good morning, John Joe, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Owen.
I just want to read out a little bit more of what Antoinette Cunningham said, John Joe. She said, it's becoming very bureaucratic style of a job. You're now in front of a PC a lot of the time, referring to increased administration required to comply with oversight. She also said it doesn't carry an attractive type pension that it did at one time. What's your views on that? Would you agree with the sentiments there?
Yeah, I suppose I would. And I've been here before, like, nobody in the Garda Representative Association or anyone in Garda Síochána deny the facts that in a more modern world, in all facets of society, that there's accountability and governance and oversight. But on Garda Síochána is probably one of the facets in the current state that has more oversight than any other body, any other industry, any other public life. And that is causing members behind in the bureaucracy that's been mentioned, the extra admin behind a PC rather than, you know, the feet on the street. And, you know, it is morale sapping as well. You know, so all those in general, and you know, we've spoken about the topic of retention and recruitment and the high amount of retirements and people resigning from Garda Síochána, and they all feed into that. And there's a vicious circle of, with the members that are left behind, there's the extra workload, and it just keeps going. And I suppose it is fairly energy sapping for you know, the members that are there at the moment, you know, so there's all those issues at play.
Okay, you mentioned there that, you know, there's more admin and there's not as many out on the streets, which is the case, and a lot of communities around the country would like to see more Gardaí on the streets, but the argument there is if the Gardaí aren't there, you can't put them on the street. But surely as well, from your point of view, you would need more protection, or you would want more protection, because, you know, these assaults and maybe abuse that Gardaí are receiving are becoming more common.
Yeah, and just to go back to that point, like, you know, there is a quite substantial amount of sworn members of an Garda Síochána, and probably as many as we've ever had employed in the state. But the issue is, with the new modernisation programme and agenda, and new divisional policing models, which is where the new divisions are aligned throughout the country, and there are many different specialist units after being established, and they are very welcome. But where do the people come from that go into those specialised units? They come from the regular guard that you see in the patrol car in Dunedee today, in Naas tomorrow night, and across the country, whether it's Portlaoise, Galway or Waterford or Pear Street in Dublin. The guards that are in their uniform, that served the people of the country and go to the calls and burglary calls and assault calls and domestic violence calls and sexual assault calls, cat in the tree calls, they are being taken off the regular, put into these specialist units. And so that is what's actually happening here, you know. And it is leaving extra work for those members on the ground. And all these specialist units, Divisional Protection Services units, special detectives, cyber crime and computer crime and drugs units, they're all very welcome, but they come from your regular policeman and woman who you see every day of the week. And that's where we have an issue with numbers and the feet on the street, as I said, you know.
Okay, I understand as well that yourselves at the Garda Representative Association and also the Association of Sergeants and Inspectors are involved in a dispute with senior Garda management over plans to introduce new rosters. What's your view on the rosters, John Joe, and what is the issue with them?
Yeah, well, just to give a summary of events, since 2012, there was a new roster was in place. It was 6 days on, 4 days off, 10-hour tours. When COVID hit in March 2020, it was, we all put our shoulder to the wheel, including the members that I represent in Kildare and the GRA represent across the country here, all Garda members. We changed our tours to 12-hour tours and 4 days, 4 off, 4 days on, 4 days off, and I suppose member of courts and different things as well. But the thing is, this roster has come in. We've worked for the last 3 years. There has been a certain amount of negotiations and consultation with the Commissioner and ourselves and the other Garda rep bodies, which includes Chief Superintendents and the Association of Garda Sergeants and Inspectors, otherwise known as AGSI, and ourselves. That came to, I suppose, in recent months, that has come to a bit of a head, and the Commissioner is wishing to introduce rosters which we do not agree with, and he is seeking now to go to the Workplace Relations Commission, the WRC, and pulling the trigger too quick on that, to be honest about it. So we are seeking to exhaust all internal avenues which have not been exhausted, and that is the impasse that we're currently at, you know. So these roster issues is a major concern for our members, and does feed into worry and does feed into, you know, low morale and lower morale as time goes on, and as uncertainty in the rosters, and there's extensions of 3 months and 6 months to try and come to a resolution. But the Commissioner wants to go to WRC now, and we are just saying that we have not exhausted all internal avenues, you know. So we're the ones who are trying to be reasonable here. And that's our kind of stance on it at the moment.
Okay, so this Friday then, the new recruitment campaign is being launched, and that's, as I mentioned from the outset, aimed at ensuring 1,000 new recruits are taken into the force. I spoke to you around 6 months ago, John Joe, where we were talking about the amount of Gardaí who maybe weren't finishing their training, or when they did, they were leaving the force after a year or 2 years. What needs to be done to ensure that Gardaí who go through the training process down in Templemore are then stationed in stations right around Kildare and around the country stay in the job?
It's very simple, actually, right? Is that, right, we're looking for extra recruitment and to have the numbers there, and that's very welcome. You know, I won't be holding my breath in that because you've heard about these numbers before. But to move on, what do we need for members when they come out of Templemore into, like I said, Naas or any other station across the country? We're looking for a safe working environment where members can come in, start their day, start their night shift, whether that's a Monday or a Sunday or Saturday, well, any day of the week, any night of the week, where they feel safe, safety in numbers, that they have the numbers on the unit, and depending on, I suppose, your environment, you know, because it's a different environment policing in, we'll say, Robertstown to policing in Naas or policing in Rattangan compared to policing in Leixlip. You know, those environments are different, but that members are safe. Now, that includes everything from that they have proper training in the college, all right, that's a given, but that there's proper training throughout their career. You know, when I joined the job a million years ago, we had what was called in-service. It's now called CPD, Continuous Professional Development. And you were given that maybe 3 or 4 times a year, up with new policy, procedure, legislation that was rolled out, because, you know, there's hundreds of documents come out every year for our members, and they have to be trained up in that knowledge. That is not happening in the same frequency. Yeah, there's a few courses online, but it's, you know, the classes have diminished, you know, over the years, that they get proper training in the use of, and we receive new equipment. Now, we're in current negotiations with different parties in relation to the introduction of body cams, and that is, as far as I'm aware, is going through the legislative process at the moment, and is at committee stage. There seems to be some obstacles, with some people maybe thinking it's there's some intrusion on private life. But, you know, when we get around those issues, that, you know, when that those body cams come in place, and then we will have that will protect our members, that the studies have been shown that body cams on police force around the country reduce assaults, reduce vexatious complaints, false complaints of our members as well, by the way, which takes up a terrible amount of time in the Garda Síochána in general. Also, what I would think would be essential, and we've looked for this for years, and of recent months this has been highlighted, we want proper, strong legislation, and that would involve mandatory sentencing for any offenders who commit assaults on our members and on frontline workers, the length and breadth of the country here. There have been a couple of cases in Naas of recent months where members I represent were before the courts as victims of assaults, and you know, there was some fines given out and warnings to people. So we are looking for that to become mandatory sentences for individuals who assault our members. And then we're getting into an environment, I suppose, which is more palatable for our members to come into every day and work and serve the people of Kildare and across the country.
Okay, finally then, John Joe, what would you say to somebody who might be listening this morning, considering joining the force, but is listening and has seen on social media the assaults of Gardaí, the conversations around, you know, bad conditions, bad pay, etc., etc., etc.? What would you say to them, and how can we make the job more attractive?
It's not all doom and gloom. Like, there are issues that I've spoken about before, and, you know, while there's no quick fix, they are issues that can be resolved with consultation with ourselves. You know, like, I have to say that the GRA and its representatives and the members they represent, but we are all policemen and women. We know what's going on. We know the problems. We know the good points. We know the bad points in the job. At times we're listened to, we would say more times than not, we're listened to, and maybe our positions aren't taken on board or taken seriously. But look, I joined the Garda Síochána in October 1996, and it's amazing how the years go by, whether you're having a good time or a bad time, but I've had a great experience in the Garda Síochána so far. I've worked with the finest of people. I've dealt with, as I say in general, you know, 98%, 99% of people that you deal with throughout the country are ordinary, decent men and women trying to do their best. People make mistakes, people make errors, and we'll deal with the other 1 or 2% as best we can. And you know, justice, everyone deserves justice as victims, and we try our best to do that. There is great pride in helping the community, and as a Garda Síochána, members of a Garda Síochána are very proud to serve the community that they work in and live in. And that's something that's essential, and I suppose in celebrating 100 years of an Garda Síochána last year, that is part and parcel of the way we work. But, you know, I hope that the Garda Síochána have launched this new recruitment campaign. They're hoping to interview up to 400 people per month. They're hoping to take on 225, thereabouts, recruits every quarter, roughly every 11 weeks to go through the college. There's 130 or 135 recruits already in training in the Garda College. So, you know, we can't wait to have these numbers come in and to have the young men and women across Ireland come and work in Naas, Kildare, Ratangan, Atay, Leixlip, Robertstown, Kilcullen, all those other towns and stations across this division and across the country. And I wish them all best of luck. And we can't wait to meet them in Kildare, because we'll take 30 in the morning. Like, you know, we need them in Kildare, we need them in Leashoffaly, we need them across the country. So best of luck to those young men and women in those interviews, and we'll see them in the future.
Okay, very well said. That's Garda John Joe O'Connell, Kildare representative of the Garda Representative Association. Thanks as always, John Joe.
Thanks, Owen.
Have your say now. Text or WhatsApp Kildare today on 0833 97 97 97.
Yeah, Michelle has been in touch as well, just asking what's happening on the M4. We mentioned this a little bit earlier on, but there is a crash in between Maynooth and Kilcock, and traffic there is at a complete standstill now heading in towards Dublin. So if you're on the M4 coming from Enfield around that area, you might want to try and get off the M4 before you reach Kilcock, because it's not moving at all. And we'll keep you up to date throughout the course of the morning here on KFM. Let's go down to Atay, and Cathaoirleach of the Atay Municipal District, Fianna Fáil Councillor Brian Dooley is with us now. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Owen. Good morning to your listeners. And just, Owen, very briefly, to agree with everything that John Joe said there previously, I would be one that would absolutely support a mandatory sentence for anybody that carries out an assault on a member of an Garda Síochána or any member of an emergency services in the country. And I think the mandatory sentence should be severe enough that it would deflect these people away from carrying out that kind of criminality. So 100% in support of them. And I think many of the people that are listening to this radio station this morning would be supporting them. So just, I wanted to say that.
Okay, thanks indeed for that, Brian. Local issues then. Nurney Village, are the sight lines going to be improved for some of the residents there?
Yeah, positive response there. What we've got back from the roads project and planning team, Owen, is that they're going to recommend traffic calming through a low-cost safety scheme. There's about five or six houses there, Owen. As they pull out onto the road, they're blinded, I suppose. Well, they don't have a good line of vision for cars that are coming from the Kildare town side. There has been several incidents and accidents there over the last number of months. It was brought to my attention by one of the residents, Ken, there. So, again, it's a positive outcome, and it's something that we're going to look at to put in low-cost safety in order to minimise and slow down traffic that's coming in at the gateway of Nurney.
Okay, the roadway up to St Michael's Cemetery in Atay, you want that to be resurfaced?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's in poor condition at the moment. There's a couple of potholes in it now that are nearly as big as graves, and an awful lot of people have been going up and down there complaining. So again, it's positive. We're going to get that sorted. They've told me by Q2, which is the start of April, really. But I've been assured that if they need to do something temporarily, they will, and they'll get it sorted in the next number of weeks. But it's gone into dreadful condition. The few potholes are starting to join up together.
Okay, just briefly on this one, because I do want to focus on the housing issue that you brought forward, but briefly, Emily Square in Atay, when is that going to be improved?
Yeah, really, really positive here. It looks like that it's going to go to pre-tender, or going to go to tender in the next number of weeks. By the end of March is what they're telling me. The tender process then will be about 4 weeks on. And once that tender process goes through without any hitches, the contractor will be on site in May this year. So that's €1 million redevelopment of Emily Square that will work in conjunction with the Shackleton Museum redevelopment. So in total, you're looking at between €6 and €7 million there of redevelopment of town centre. That is really, really important for a Thai town. And again, it's important for us as well as councillors that we were able to continue to push this through, because like anything, we're trying to build and encourage people to come to Athy through tourism, the Blue Way, various different things like that. So this is going to be an important building block for the town.
Did you get figures then on the total number of single dwelling planning applications for the Athy MD, and you wanted a breakdown of approvals, refusals and invalid applications?
Yeah, unfortunately not for the Athy MD. And in fairness, the planning department and the services team had been in contact with me. In order to answer that actual question, it would have taken one person an awful long time to go through it. What they assured me, Owen, was that they are going to the market to look for a new planning administration system, a PAS, that will be able to give each of the municipal districts in Kildare a breakdown of those approvals, refusals and invalid applications, because ultimately all of the councillors right across Kildare, we are working with people that are looking to build their own homes in the countryside. So it can be very frustrating for us as councillors when they are refused or when an application goes in and then they're told subsequently that it's invalid. So it's just a way for us as councillors to analyse the data quicker. So I look forward to seeing when that will be progressed.
All right, on that note, Fianna Fáil councillor and Cathaoirleach of the Athy Municipal District, Brian Dooley, thanks for your time this morning. Brian, just catching up on a couple of the other messages that have come in to us. Mick in Mead says, regarding the issue of the lifting of the eviction ban, these TDs are elected by the public to represent us, but how quickly they forget when they are in. You're unhappy with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. You say they've let the people down and turned on them in relation to the lifting of the eviction ban. And a reminder, coming up in the next hour, very shortly actually, in the next 10 minutes, we're going to be speaking to independent TD Cathal Berry to get the views of the independents.